Welcome to the Making Sense of Ministry podcast, presented to you by the Youth Ministry Institute, a podcast designed to help you lead well in your ministry, transform lives, and impact generations. Here's your host, Brian Lawson.
Welcome to episode 10 of the Making Sense of Ministry podcast. This is the podcast designed to help you lead well in your ministry, transform lives, and impact generations. I'm back here again today with Kirsten Knox. Kirsten, say hi.
Hey, everyone.
And we also have today a special guest, Mikaela Tenney.
Hi.
Mikaela is the Director of Discipleship and Student Ministries at First UMC Stewart. She's also involved with us in our work at the Florida Annual Conference for the United Methodist Church. And that's how we got to know her. And it's been a real joy working with her. So we're glad she's here to share some insights with us. And we think you'll enjoy her as well. Here at the Making Sense of Ministry podcast, we love tough questions. We never shy away from them. Questions really are a sign of growth, and it's way easier to hear God's answers to those questions when we join in others asking those very same things. That's why today I'm excited to tell you about our sponsor. BeADisciple.com is a great place for you to go when you're dealing with spiritual questions and you need some friends to help you with that. I'd encourage you to scroll through their affordable, ecumenical, accredited, short-term online courses, all taught by content experts. Here you'll be in the company of others where it's safe to discuss hard questions. If you have questions and are looking to grow, enroll in a course today and ask away at BeADisciple.com. Okay, let's get started. Welcome back again to Kirsten and welcome Mikaela. It is so good to have you both here today. So, Mikaela, you serve at First UMC Stewart, and we found out something interesting right before we started. We found out you live in the church parsonage, which is right there on campus. So, what is that like? What's the good and what's the bad and what's the weirdest story you got?
Oh, man, I don't know about the weirdest story. I know that, I mean, it's obviously a blessing. And wow, the commute, you cannot beat that for sure. But yeah, it's definitely interesting to live in the parsonage. My house is right next to the church preschool. And so some days I wake up to children screaming. During Christmas, I wake up to jingle bells at 7 a.m. being screamed at the top of their lungs because, you know, why wouldn't you scream on the playground that early in the morning? So, yeah, so it's very interesting, you know, seeing my coworkers, the maintenance man walking by when I just want to walk my dog, haven't even had my coffee yet, you know. I call it Camp FUMC sometimes because you step outside and you're like, oh, hey, boss. Oh, hey, coworker. Oh, hello, everybody. It's just like, you know, you're at summer camp, but forever. So
so I have to ask you, because this is really important. I think this is important for all of us in different ways, but maybe especially for you. How do you set the boundaries in that kind of environment? I mean, because I imagine church members just pop by or think, you know, in some ways their mind is probably like, we pay for that parsonage, so we own it, so we can just stop by, right?
There's definitely some bits of that, but what I found works is really just ignoring, you know, that's the best way for manners. Like, I love you in Christ, my brother or sister, but today is not the day where I'm supposed to answer the door, especially because I'm in my pajamas and only I should be seeing me in my pajamas right now. So, you know, I'm just going to stay in my room. My dog might bark her head off at the doorbell, but we are in fact not here because we are unavailable to you in these moments. So,
yeah. And I think that's so important for people to know, right? And for ministry leaders, it's like, okay to not always respond when it's appropriate, you know, when it's your day off or when, you know, those kind of things. It's so appropriate.
I remember we were planning for our annual pumpkin patch and somebody's like, well, since you live so close, why don't we just put some of the pumpkins on your back patio? And I was like, absolutely not. You will not be putting pumpkins on the back patio so that anytime you need to sell the extra ones, you have to come to my pad. Oh, no. That's not going to work.
Kirsten, you have some parsonage experience, right?
I did. I grew up in a parsonage and most of the time it was right on campus. But I was a kid, so I don't think like the boundaries part or people coming up. We did have people that would stop by at different, you just never knew different times. You never knew when someone was going to stop by, but that didn't bother me then. So I think as an adult, that would be a lot harder than it was But I just remember, like, I wanted to paint my bedroom, and my mom's like, well, we need to go through the trustees and get that done. And I'm like,
yes.
It was always the process with those kind of things.
Yeah.
Did you grow up Methodist?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've learned, because I grew up Baptist, I'm like, oh, so they really do take that whole method thing very seriously. There is a method, there is a process, and that's how it's done. So yeah. I keep learning about that.
Yes. There is a method to form the committee.
Yes.
To form another committee. So
to talk about the method. So,
yeah. Right.
My mom always used to say to us that we had to be a good steward of the church's money. So, like, turn off the lights when you leave the room, or just be responsible. And I always liked it cooler. So in the winter, I would like to crack my window. And mm-hmm. I grew up in Indiana, and put my fan in my window and blow it in at night so I could snuggle yes. under the blanket. And my mom at some point would be like, Kirsten, you have to close your window and take the fan out. And I'm like, why? She's like, because you're causing the heat in the whole house to kick on. And I'm like that was a problem, right? I'm like,
that okay. would make me so sad.
Mm. Yeah. And she's like, we have to be a good steward of the church's money. And I remember thinking as a kid, I don't know who the steward person is, but I don't like this. I didn't like just the context. I was like, she always said we got to be a good steward. And I'm like, who is the steward?
Steward is not helping us out right now.
I don't like him. He's not fun.
Kirsten, you're calling me out on being a bad steward here. You know, I'm like, let's crank the AC down real cold.
Listen, I'm all about it. I run hot already. So I'm like, I need all the fans, all the AC, because your girl's struggling.
I get it. Yeah.
Michaela, I'm wondering, like, how long have you been there? And I wonder if you just briefly could tell us a little bit about, like, how you got involved in ministry, or how you felt called to ministry.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been at my church for 6 years now, which has been a huge blessing, because I was just able to graduate the sixth graders that were there when I first got here. So that was a huge thing for me. And I would say that, I mean, my call has really just been something that God's been working on throughout the entirety of my life that I just really didn't realize at the time. But I have been a nanny for as long as I can remember. And I started leading Bible studies in student ministry when I was 16 in student ministry as well. And so God just kind of was working that out. And I'm always everybody else's children's perpetual aunt. Like, that's my role in life. And I love it. I have like 7 nieces and nephews and godchildren that I've just adopted into my world, because my family taught us that we love big and we're just always adopting people into our family. And so to me, you know, that's ministry as well. And that's just how my personal life has always been. And so it only made sense for that to take root in my career as well. And so when I was at summer camp, when I was at the very end of my senior year of my undergrad, that was when I felt the Lord calling me to go back to school, get my master's in youth ministry so that I could have the tools that I needed in order to minister to the best of my ability, to the kids that I was already serving. You know, I was auntie to somebody and I was a youth leader to somebody throughout my entire life. And so God really just impressed on my heart to make sure that I was doing the best that I could in those areas. So then I did it, and then there was ministry. So.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. That's excellent. I love that whole philosophy. In fact, I guess it was probably about 2 years ago now, I've had one sermon in my whole life where I had a standing ovation at multiple services, which was weird, mm-hmm. right? That doesn't happen in church, first off. So it was right. strange. But the whole concept of the sermon was about stewardship, ironically. but it was about that we should constantly be inviters, all right? And that Absolutely. There's always an invitation and we're always pulling up an extra chair to the table. And that we should always have the philosophy. And so that's kind of what I was hearing you describing. And that's fantastic. I love it. So I think we've got some questions to tackle. Some of these questions are questions that people have sent us directly. Others are things that I have just seen in groups and we've heard. A question we got from Kyle, and he says he's from New York. I'm not sure if that's upstate or the city. But he asked a question about starting in his at his church. This is his first full-time position, and he just started, which, you know, first off, go you, Kyle, for starting in the middle of a pandemic. Got this. Whew. But his question really was like, what does he need to do? Like, what are some of the first things he needs to think about and prioritize is really what his question was. And then I have a follow-up that I thought of after I read his question. So curious what you guys think. What would be some of the first things that you would say Kyle maybe needs to focus on or prioritize? I know, Kirsten, you led a workshop specifically about this. So I don't know if you have some insights to share.
Yeah, I was thinking what I tell people oftentimes in that season is to spend time very intentionally about getting to know people. So to build relationships in that year, I did teach a workshop on it at Rooted, and we talked about prioritizing people over programs. And I think when you first start in a place, you have such this internal drive to be results oriented and to do things and to change things. And that makes sense because that's kind of how we are wired and we want to do that. But I always say, hold off on that and really spend time getting to know people. I would identify groups of people like in your church, your parents, your students, children, who are the influencers in those circles, and really spend some time getting to know them and asking questions and listening to understand. The second part of that is really to understand the culture. I think the gift of being new to a place is you have an objective perspective and you're not as emotionally attached to all the things that they are. And that's a gift, but also you have to be careful in that and really try to understand the culture and the whys and all of how people are attached to the activities, the events, the programs, whatever that looks like for them. So really asking questions and listening, I think, and showing empathy to wherever they are. Because if you're new and that's difficult, that transition, but it's also very difficult for them as they transition into a new leader and getting to know you. And so really giving them space to feel that in that transition. But I would say build relationships. And even outside the youth ministry, be intentional about that. I'd even make a list. Like, who are those people that I want to make sure I spend time to spending time with them, getting to know them, asking questions to do that. So to have some kind of strategic plan to do that. And then also just to be a student of the culture and getting to know them and their church and all of those things. And I would resist making big changes for the first year. As always, that's kind of why that is our rule of thumb that we tell people. I'm like, unless there's a safety issue, then right there's some immediacy there that you have to pay attention to. But other than that, to be real hesitant about coming in and making changes, but more coming in and listening and building relationships.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of, you kind of touched base a little bit on my follow-up question, because I think we all probably agree that being very careful and making those changes the first year is really, really important, because you don't know what kind of landmine you're going to walk into. I mean, you may accidentally change something that someone that was beloved 6 years ago brought in, and it's been held on to for all that time as if you're holding on to that person. And you may accidentally walk into that. I walked into a situation where I played a game of a beloved youth minister who had passed away while doing the job. And I played that game not knowing that I was actually bringing up wounds. And I was only there for 3 weeks, you know, at that point. So I then had a lot to deal with. So you never really know how something got to that point. But the question, the follow-up that I have is, how do you gauge when it's appropriate to make a change, particularly like in that first year? Because we all know we probably have lots of things we want to change. We're like, oh yeah, this would be great to change and this would be great. But we have to hold off on those. So how do we gauge when it actually is appropriate to make a change within that first year? Michaela, I don't know, what do you think about that?
I think I agree with Kirsten in that, you know, that first year, try really hard not to touch anything in that, because my thing is you have to go through as many firsts in a season as possible so that you just have proper context, period, about what you're dealing with. And so we always try really hard in our lives to make sure we have as much context as possible before we make decisions. And that goes towards ministry too. And so for me, the only reason you should make changes is if you just do not have the resources, if whatever is happening is just not long-term and sustainable for you as a ministry leader, for the volunteers who are trying to help make it happen, then go ahead and make that call. But for as much as possible, try to just keep things rolling, because people are going through that transition, because you do need to learn what's going on and how people feel about certain things and where they're at spiritually. Like, there's so many things that go into that. But I would say you want to still set yourself up as a new person for success as much as possible. So if there's something that's completely draining you as a resource, if you can't be in two places at once, which is my constant struggle in ministry, then make a call so that you can actually pour as much as you can, like to the best of your abilities. You know, don't shoot yourself in the foot right off the bat. So that would be the only guidance I have in terms of making that call.
Yeah, I think that's so good, right? Like, if it's about resources, I remember when one of the churches I served in, I was there only a few weeks. And before I got there, they were in the process of renovating the youth room. And one of those steps was getting new carpet. And I mean, and they had very old carpet and had some rat issues. So like, changing carpet would be very important and healthy. Mm-hmm. And so we were in the midst of doing that. But I came in like, as that was happening, it was already set to happen. Like, I didn't make any of those decisions, but the carpet got changed in the youth room after I started, just a couple of weeks. And I remember this Sunday after, we had high schoolers very upset about this change. And I really didn't anticipate it, one, because it wasn't a decision I made. But I think they were just so sensitive to change and their fears of what might change. And this is the real safe place to them and a place that they value. And it got disrupted even on a very minor. It was a safe place to put a lot of that anxiety and those feelings. But I remember that just as I was like, I didn't see that coming. And so we had to have that conversation about the carpet. And I'm like, I really don't think your value is on the carpet being changed. And so set up that opportunity. But I think there's those things really to be aware of. And if there's something, a change that has to be made, I mean, I think working with your team and them, if they feel motivated to make that change, or if it was a change that was already in process, and you've come into it in a place they were already moving in that direction, then I would think you can walk through that. But even that, to be very careful in doing that and communicating, would be very helpful as you walk through that.
Man, so many interesting stories are wrapped around the flooring of places, right? I mean, we were doing a renovation in one place I was, and I went on vacation. And when I went on vacation, it was supposed to be, there's like a cafe area, and it was supposed to be like the concrete stained floor. I come back and a trustee had made a decision to put down like this tile laminate stuff that looked like Cheez-Its. I mean, it really looked like Cheez-Its. And his response was, well, it's the same color as what you were going to get with stained concrete. I'm like, no, it's not. So I was gone for like a week and I come back and it's completely different. The plan's completely different. And so then the teenagers all walked in and called it the Cheez-It floor and assumed I picked it. And I was like, I had nothing to do with that.
That's what you get for leaving. How dare you?
I tell you. Yeah. So I think you guys are right on in really maintaining consistency that first year to understand the culture. But there are moments where change is necessary. But you need to make sure that it's not just you making it because you want it. You know, it needs to be something that actually has a legitimate safety concern or serious reason behind it. And I would say pull the team behind the decision. And if you can get your team to make that decision rather than you, that's always better, because then it's a collective group that they decided that you support, particularly early on. That's really important. I know I had an issue with some bands when I first got at a church. There was two bands and they were competing together. And I found out that they were separate worship bands because the brother and sister weren't getting along. So they started a separate. So it was toxic from the beginning. And the whole thing, they were like, one band thought they were better than the other. And it was just not at all the culture we wanted to create. So we in that first year merged them into one band, and I did get some pushback, and if I were to do that over again, I think I would do some better communication and pull in the team a little bit better on that decision. But so a few weeks ago, we hosted some more digital gatherings. Those, for those who don't know, are where we basically host Zoom calls for youth and children's ministers, where we provide some encouragement and a place to ask questions and community. And in case you don't know, we are starting some cohorts. These are eight-week intensive cohorts that will start on the day this releases. We'll start 2 days after. So if you're hearing this on the first day or so that this is released, I'd encourage you to check out those cohorts. We'll put the link in the show notes. But anyways, during the digital gatherings, particularly with the children's ministers, trunk or treat came up. And then I think that the CDC has also come out with some guidelines saying that trunk or treats are sort of high risk events. For whatever reason, I'm not going to argue whether it's right or wrong. I'm just telling you what they have said. So I'm curious if you guys know, like, what are your churches doing? Are they doing this event? Have you heard of any churches who are looking at alternatives? Just curious what our thoughts are in this group about that.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough spot to be in, you know, just being in the middle of a pandemic. But I know that churches in our area are looking at doing more drive-through type of things, where, you know, you invite families to still decorate their cars, and then they can have the kids drive through and see the trunks. And then at the very end is when they'll get their treat, like in a goodie bag. They can pass that over without too much physical contact and all that stuff. So I've heard of that being done, and others just having families decorate their cars at home and then send in videos and pictures so that they can be put in the Sunday worship experience so that everybody can see. Might just be a fun family activity together, but then the church gets the benefit of seeing the different ways that people are creative. I think for student ministry, one of the things we might do is just maybe an outdoor movie night, something like that. I haven't told my kids that yet, so nobody tell them, because I don't usually like to say things ahead of time. But
we'll make sure we post this on your ministry page so they see it.
Yeah, thanks for that. Right. So yeah, we're just trying to think of different ways to remain safe, but still try to celebrate the season and have a little bit of fun. It's definitely a hard spot to be in, though.
Yeah, so true. I heard this one idea at our digital gathering that I thought was really good. This children's minister talked about they were still going to have their congregation decorate their trunks and spread the cars out, but then they were going to take the students or the children, and they were kind of like a parade, or like a, I was like kind of like a runway. They would walk down in their costume one by one, and people could see them in their costumes, and then they still have that. And I was like, that is so cool, because they get all that attention, and here I have this costume and everyone gets to see it. And then at the end, they would have their goodie bag that they got to have, which I was like, that is really cool. And then I heard someone talk about also, they're like, oh, if you could add like a place where people could get pictures and be able to add that, so decorate it so they could take some pictures with their costumes before they walk through the parade runway of decorated cars. I thought that was a really good idea.
Yeah, I remember that one. That one stood out to me, Kirsten. And I think you can do that in a safe way. I mean, I think that, I was joked that I was a germaphobe by the students. They all said I was germaphobe. To them, I was. I think maybe to most adults, I'm not that much. But to them especially, I was. Well, Kirsten might disagree. But so this obviously whole situation puts me on high alert. But so when I was thinking about that, I thought, you know, that in concept is so great. But how do you do that with people screaming? So because, right, the screaming is part of the issue potentially. And so I thought, you know, if you space the cars out well, like you mentioned, Kirsten, if you really make sure that they're spaced far enough out both directions and between vehicles, but then potentially you also could give them like little cowbells, like right, give everybody some other noisemakers that's not screaming. And then here's the clever part, I think. Put speakers out with crowd screaming from the speakers behind the cars. Nice. So it sounds like people are screaming, and then they've got all these, you know, noisemakers. And then you just send kids down, you know, with space between them. And I think you could totally do it and would feel like, I mean, just like the NFL and like the sports are doing, where they're putting in fake audience noises. Yeah. I mean, I think you could totally do that. And kids, I think, would love that. Yeah, that parade stood out to me too when I heard that.
I thought that'd be great. Yeah. And then I also heard, I was looking on Facebook, and someone had talked about the Great Pumpkin Parable. It's a book. So I had to research that because I was like, I don't know what that is. And so they talk about doing story time and creating that space for that in an evening, or maybe watching the Great Pumpkin movie and do an outside movie, like you had mentioned. So like, I think there are a lot of different ideas to think about what to do. I would just say, talk to your leadership, and each church is navigating this differently, and make sure whatever you do is really communicated well to your supervisor as you're thinking about it, but also works within the guidelines that your church has set up so that it's consistent in whatever you do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. That's great. So I would say if anybody knows some great things they're doing for Trunk or Treat, or they've seen some great ideas, maybe they're not doing it, or even for student ministries. I know lots of people do pumpkin patches and people are trying to think through that. I would love it if you guys post that in the Making Sense of Ministry group and share that, because I know there's other people who could really use your ideas. And we think that collectively, as a community, is where the best ideas are found.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So this next question, I actually saw this posted in a group that I'm a part of. You know, we're all part of these different ministry groups. And I thought this was a great question for people to hear answered. And the question was, do you keep notes after each week's lesson or gathering about like what could use improvement? And also, do you keep notes about the kids or students? And so that was the question. Now, I don't know the full context of the question, but that's what they were asking. So what do y'all think? What do you do?
Yeah, I more so keep mental notes in terms of like the lesson after teaching. One, we're always our own worst critic. And so that kind of just sticks with you. You're like, well, that bombed, that was terrible. So just keeping that in mind for the next time that you have a speaking engagement. So I don't necessarily keep written notes about that, but I definitely keep notes on my students. And one of my favorite parts of a meeting that I have is when I sit down with our ministry small group coach. Her job is to encourage our volunteers and our leaders. And so she helps in that regard. And so we sit down together and we look at the list of students that we have in our ministry and we just talk through them, you know, what this kid got going on, how do we be in prayer for this student? And, you know, how long has it been since we've seen the student's face and what's going on in their life? What can we do to reach out to them? And I love that because it makes the ministry smaller in the sense of you getting to know what's going on with your kids. And when you can write those things down and keep track of different things that are going on, then you're able to build on more of that relationship versus, you know, when you have youth ministry and everybody's coming at you at once, it's really hard to keep track of what's going on with everybody and all that. But if you take the time after the fact, once the craziness has died down, and really sit down and think through and remember different things about different students and even what's going on in the lives of the leaders and how we might need to offset some of the leadership help because they might be going through something at home, you know, just really trying to help make things work well. That's a really important part of what we do.
Yeah. So you said you have a ministry small group coach. Is that right?
Yeah.
What is that role? Is that a volunteer? Like, how did you get to that?
Yes, it's a volunteer role. So our ministry is small group led. And so when you ask the question, well, how do you disciple students? Our answer is always, well, we disciple them via small groups. And so our small group leaders are the most important part of our ministry. But when you get to a point where you have 13 small group leaders, we know that it's impossible to really be a great mentor of more than 8 to 10 people, you know? So I have my admin volunteer who's fantastic. I don't know where I would be without her. But she kind of took on more of a role of pouring into those leaders as well so that those leaders can pour into the students. We have to be very intentional about how we disciple our leaders. And so we work together to make sure that we do that to the best of our ability so that that's modeled for them and they can in turn do it for the kids. So,
wow. Excellent. I love it. That's a great position. If you don't have that, you should get that.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, so good. Yeah, I haven't thought about, I don't think I've ever written them down, like kept notes afterwards. I did a lot more of the mental notes of after teaching a lesson, but I also would say asking some of your small group leaders or whoever has other adults that's been a part of you teaching that lesson and getting their perspective is always helpful when you're trying to decide what went really well, what could we do differently, and their perspective. Because yes, I think we are our own worst critic And so getting other people's perspective can be very helpful. Sometimes it takes some courage to ask that question to other people, right? Like, you got to be ready for that. But I would say if you're a note taker and that kind of stuff, documenting and all that stuff is kind of the way you are wired and would be helpful, then yeah, keep those notes. But yes, the most important part is then communicating it with the people that are there serving those students. So how you do that. I would do one-on-ones with my small group leaders, and that would be a time when we would talk through those kinds of things with their students, because there are times I received information or new things that were going on that they may have not always gotten, or that they did in small group that I didn't know. So being able, there are different ways to do that, but creating an avenue where you can share that information before and after, even before programming or after, for us small group leaders were there, and having that kind of time to touch base with them and communicating with them was always helpful. But having that, but I'm with you, Brian, I love this coach idea and being able to have do that. That's great.
Yeah.
I would also add, Kirsten, you just reminded me, now that we are trying to figure out how to do ministry in the pandemic and, with COVID, our ministry, we're working really hard at trying to do like hybrid ministry, kind of like the school systems where you have online ability to come to youth group and in-person ability to come to youth group. And so what that means for me is that because we do that via Zoom, I now have a recording of the lesson that I've taught. And so it's really painful, but it's also really helpful to just watch your lesson and go, okay, so I can work on that. I can work on that. So yeah, it hurts, but it's good.
Yeah. Yes. And I would say too, and there were times that they would pick out things that went really well that I wasn't really always good at seeing, because I could tend to see where I thought I could do better and the critique part, and missed the part of what was really good and what really went well. And having them speak into that also created space for that for me at times. It was also very helpful.
Yeah, I think for me, I didn't take notes weekly, but I would say probably every month or every couple months during our leader meetings, we would ask, hey, how are things going? And do a sort of informal evaluation. And then at the end of every school year, we did a really significant evaluation for primarily as we were thinking about the next year. And so we would do that every year. And then when we would have big events, so like, let's say we had a fall retreat, or if you had like trunk or treat, you know, you have a folder with all these files potentially in it. Maybe it's a digital folder, or maybe it's a physical folder. I would go through within just a couple of days after it was over, and I would write down all of the real wins, like all of the things that we loved that went really well. And then I would also write down the things that were opportunities, right? Things that could use some improvement. I stole that opportunities language from Target years ago when I worked there. But then I wouldn't even think about it anymore. I'd write it down, put that piece of paper on top of the folder in it. And then, so when I opened it next year to start planning, I've got those notes to look at, from the previous year, because I know I won't remember unless I have those notes. So that's what I would do for events. Depending on the number of students I think you have or children, how you do notes about kids or students specifically may change. You know, when you have only 10, it's pretty easy to kind of keep track of that yourself. When you get to 20, 30, 40, 50, whatever number, it becomes significantly more difficult. And so we invested in Planning Center, which I know lots of people are familiar with. And we ultimately started using that for notes on students. The kind of notes that went in there were things that we thought that their next leader might need to know. So when they transfer to a new leader, also in there were significant life events that we thought were important to remember, or if there was an incident or safety issue, we also would put that in there. And then also if we had to contact the parents for both positive but also negative reasons, that was all in there. And that was really helpful. I think the important part of that is that our leaders had access to most of that information, at least the people in their small group. So you really have to train your leaders on how to use that information and how not to use that information. Mm-hmm. And I think we had, this may not be the right term, I'd have to look back, but like a non-disclosure agreement or like confidentiality agreement that they signed every year that says, you got to understand this information does not leave these circles and these places. So anyways, that's how we ultimately ended up doing it. Just we got to a place where we felt like we needed to have it in a database somewhere. So that's how we did. But however you find the do notes, I do think having notes are important. Just however you go about doing that, I think can vary. Because as the other two have said, it's important to evaluate, even if it means watching yourself from a Zoom recording, as painful as it is.
The struggle is real, my friend.
Yep. Okay. So the last question I actually received from Autumn and Jonathan, but also other people, and I've seen lots of people asking this question. And it's about COVID policies and waivers. So should they have COVID policies at their church? I'm assuming about the youth or children's ministry specifically. Do they publish them? Do they not? And do they need waivers for the kids and students? First off, I'll say before we answer, we're not lawyers. So don't, yeah. this is not legal advice. And we don't pretend to be that. But what do you guys think about COVID policies, and do we publish them or not? And what are your thoughts?
Yeah, with that disclaimer, I'm going to circle back to at the beginning of this conversation, we started talking about our friends, the trustees, and all the different committees that churches have. And so as a ministry leader, I totally feel like this is an opportunity to lean into exactly what those committees do best and what they are there for. And so whatever denomination you are, whatever your church has set up, lean into those leaders who work in that. You know, they want to make sure that the church is safe as a whole, and therefore your ministry as a whole is safe. And so if there's a way for you to ask those questions to them, I know because I work at a church that falls under the United Methodist Conference, we get a lot of our guidance from the conference, and then it goes directly to our senior pastor, who answers for our entire church. And so I'm constantly bending his ear and saying, hey, what do you think about this? Like, those decisions are not just me and my volunteer team. We do the ministry side of things, and how do we have a great event, and how do we minister to students? But when it comes to those safety issues, I need to hear from those people who do that on a larger scale. And so, you know, find out what those rules are, and then you ask them, do we post it? Do we not? Because they have to figure that out for the overarching church. And so whatever the church is doing as a whole, then you guys kind of as a ministry, you fit in within that, and you make sure that you're doing everything that you can to stay safe. So I would just kind of like get in line with whatever the church is doing rather than trying to reinvent the wheel or be the one that has to be at the forefront of making those decisions. Find somebody who can make those decisions with you and for you in that regard.
Yeah. And that really shows support of the church as a whole, right? I mean, when you do that, you're saying you're also submitting to authority of other leaders in the congregation, which then also makes you seem as a team player as well.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. Which is always good to project to the other people on staff and to the other leaders in the church.
And safety is too important not to be a team player about. You know, we don't want to go freewheeling and, you know, get into trouble because we didn't think about something. We got to have so many bases covered. So it's important to ask all those people about those things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I think what also would be helpful too, I would add, is that your different age levels are doing it the same. I realize in all contexts that might be difficult in some places more than other, but yes, lean into your church leadership. And that's a decision that not just you make, but also it would be helpful if everyone was doing that the same way. And so that families who had children and teenagers knew what to expect and could navigate that in some cohesiveness would be helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a lawyer. He would not fall under this type of law, but his recommendation was always don't publish a policy unless you are 100% going to stick to it. You know, it's better to just not have it published. Now, I'm not sure how we all feel about that, how leaders feel about that, but from a legal perspective, he said it's better to have nothing published than to have something published and not follow it. And so I would say whatever you're going to do, if your church publishes it and you publish it within your ministry, just make sure that whatever that is, that it happens. And to be honest, that's really great for communication and for people to feel safe and to trust your leadership anyways, right? When you do what you say you're going to do, it really makes a significant difference on how people feel about you and the ministry and the trust that they put in you. Yeah, do you guys think waivers are necessary? I mean, what are your thoughts on waivers during COVID? I personally think that maybe it falls under your general waiver for participation.
I think it depends on what we're talking about. Like, we as a church had to have waivers for our volunteers, for those who would be coming onto the church campus, specific to COVID, but that was just something that came straight down from the conference and we just had to abide by that. They didn't give us instruction in terms of waivers for the students. I'm sure if we wanted to, we could implement something, but we just kind of took that direction and we just had our leaders sign those. So it depends on the context and what you're trying to accomplish, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. I've known churches that are doing waivers and churches that aren't. So again, I would say lean into your church leadership and let that be a decision that they make and that you are in line with. But also, I mean, personally, I think COVID is something, right, we're learning to live in. I always wanted to say when it's over, I'm not sure that's ever going to happen. So being able to put it in your waiver with all the other stuff that you have in there that releases the church of liability, there might be some simple ways of doing that. I mean, I know for us, when we would have those waivers, we used that when we went off campus. We didn't always have a waiver for any time, right? Someone showed up for a program that they had that. So I think there's some logistics to like work through and think through, but as long as you're, I would say, be in line with your leadership and then create a plan that's workable and that everyone is on the same page would also be helpful as you work through that.
Yeah. You know, I bring up Disney again, cause you know, my family's slight Disney fanatics, but when you walk on their property, they just have a sign out. I mean, it's just, you know, basically it's the waiver published on a sign that you acknowledge these risks just by being here. And so maybe it's as simple as your church just puts out a sign somewhere that says, by being on campus, you understand these risks. And that, you know, we're working hard, obviously, to mitigate them, but at the same time, they're still there. So yeah, like these two have said, just think about your church leadership and what it is that they would have you do. I think working together and being cohesive in your communication and what you follow is really important. So I think we're kind of closing up our time together. Do you guys have any kind of last thoughts that you want to share before we close out this episode with our listeners?
God just brought one of my favorite verses to my mind. So I would just love to share that for everybody who's listening. It's Romans 15:13, and it says, "May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit." And that's just my prayer for all the listeners. We are operating in very strange times, but we serve a God who gives us hope, and that's what we can operate out of. And so that's my prayer for everybody as well.
Mm. Excellent. Love that. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Beautiful. I would say what I've been thinking about a lot this week, shared a little bit about it at Rooted, is that God isn't wasting your efforts. And that has just been something I have been meditating on and thinking a lot about. The things look differently, not being in person or as we used to be. I think sometimes we don't see the fruit or it doesn't look the way we would always like, but just to remember that the care, the compassion, the love that you are giving students and families, that God's not wasting that. And even if you don't see the effects of that, God is using that, and that is powerful.
Excellent. Thank you both so much. Well, friends, so that kind of brings us to the end of today. One thing I'm going to put down the show notes as we were talking. I thought this was important. Our friend Kelly Mentor has written several articles for us that we've posted about mental health, and she also played a significant role in the workshops at this last conference. But she's also taking new clients, and she's been in ministry. She's been in youth ministry. So she understands a lot of what you're facing and may be a good person for you to reach out to. So we would strongly encourage you anytime, but especially during this season, to reach out to a counselor of some sorts during this season. If you don't know one, I'm going to put a link down to where she's at so that you can look her up. And I know she can take clients no matter where they're located, because she can do this on Zoom. So we would love for you to check that out. Also down in the description, I'm going to put a link to our Facebook group, which is the Making Sense of Ministry group. Really love to have you in there and involved and sharing your ideas and comments. But also, you can submit questions for the next podcast episode. And I think soon we're going to do a giveaway for people who we choose your questions for. So watch out for that. And until next time, friends, I hope we've helped you make sense of this thing we call ministry.
For more information regarding coaching, consulting, job placement, and online courses, join us at yminstitute.com.